From KUAZ, Arizona Public Media, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up on today's show, we'll look at a new documentary called The American Southwest, Are We Running Dry? I'll talk with the director and writer Jim Tebow about the film. It airs Thursday, November 13th on KUAT Channel 6. A special celebration of Tucson history and culture is happening next week, recreating Father Kino's arrival in Tucson in 1700. Tony Paniagua talks to two organizers of the event about what to expect. And this weekend is the Tucson Open Studio Tour, an opportunity to get up close and personal with local artists and their work. I'll visit some downtown artists who are part of the tour for a preview. That's all coming up next on Arizona Spotlight. Huge numbers of Arizona voters cast their votes on Tuesday in election 2008. Gabrielle Giffords was elected to her second term as Congresswoman from Arizona's District 8. As we'll hear, spirits were high on election night. Talking over the noise of the celebration for her victory, we've got Christopher Conover now with Gabrielle Giffords.
You outlined in your speech the things you accomplished in the first 2 years. What's first up on the agenda for the next 2 years?
Well, certainly the economy. The economy's really in trouble right now. We're the second in the nation in terms of our foreclosures. Unemployment benefits are going up in dramatic numbers right now. We got to keep Americans working. So we're going to go back to Washington immediately for an economic stimulus package. Second, immigration. We have not done what we need to do, which is to really pass comprehensive immigration reform and to solve the problems on the border. And third, solar energy. I think that we can be the solar con capital of the world. We have the land, we have the sun, we have the technology. So there's three areas that I hope to concentrate on with this upcoming year.
You've been in the Democratic majority for 2 years. The majority remains, and now you have a Democratic president. Does that make your job a little easier?
Well, it certainly makes it easier, but it's no slam dunk. I doubt that the Democrats will pick up 60 seats in the Senate, so we'll continue to have to work in the Senate as well as we have in the past. And it's important that even though the Democrats have picked up seats, we got to work with the Republicans. That's what the American people want. They're tired of the nastiness and the partisanship. These problems are far greater than any political party. We got to work together as Americans.
Are you happy with the way things went? Obviously happy with the outcome.
Yeah. I'm very proud of the campaign that we ran. We focused on our volunteers, and we talked to the great people of Southern Arizona about the issues. I honestly think that the negativity and the divisiveness, you know, that's not what the American people want. They want to hear solutions. They want to hear what you're going to do for them. And I'm really pleased that not only did we stay positive and we talk about the issues, we also discouraged others that were trying to take this race into the gutter.
Do you expect a different feel in Washington with the Democratic president-elect and after January a Democratic president?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure this nation's going to be so excited going back to Washington. And, you know, anytime you have a change of administration, you have a complete changeover. But again, our challenge is to get to work. I mean, there are so many problems that Senator Obama is going to be inheriting. The economy's not in good shape. 50 million Americans without health insurance, a public school system which is really in trouble, immigration problems. But on issue after issue, two wars right now, Afghanistan and Iraq, we have our work cut out for us.
Thank you so much and congratulations again.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Writer, director, and producer Jim Tebow's background in environmental planning has guided his work on films that remind us how precious our natural resources are. His latest documentary is called The American Southwest, Are We Running Dry? It takes a serious look at the water issues that are confronting our part of the nation. The film is narrated by Jane Seymour, and it will air on KUAT Channel 6 next week, Thursday, November 13th. I spoke to Jim Tebow while he was visiting public radio station KCRW in Santa Monica. I started by asking him about the genesis of the project called Are We Running Dry?
Senator Paul Simon, the former and late United States Senator Paul Simon, wrote a book called Tapped Out about the global water crises. And my background is an environmental planner. Years ago in the Northwest, and some of my documentaries, early documentaries, were all about the environment. I was attracted to the project. I felt that this issue is so grave and so incredibly explosive. I thought what it really require is a massive public information education effort to educate the world regarding the evolving global water crises. And so I I approached Paul about doing this, and he thought it was a great idea. And in time, we produced Running Dry, and it focused on the world. I filmed in the Middle East. I was on the Gaza Strip, the West Bank. I was on the border between Lebanon and Israel, which is, by the way, where the war between Hezbollah and Israel started out. It was over water. I filmed in Africa. I filmed in all over India, northern China, northern Shaanxi province in China. One of the things I began to realize as I was heading, you know, going around and presenting it is that the American public just looks at the rest of the world in a rather abstract sort of way. And when I present the reality of every 15 seconds a child dies from a lack of water or water-related diseases, I begin to realize that American public just looks at it as, well, that's over there and we're here. That has nothing to do with us. So I was motivated to put together a new project which would take the water crisis and put it on everybody's front doorstep.
The focus of the film looks at right here at the American Southwest, particularly at the seven states that are using the Colorado River as their main source of water. What do you see as the future of that plan?
Well, it's bleak at best. I mean, the Colorado River now is at the lowest level it's ever been recorded, at least in the last 85 years. It's 2 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than it's ever been measured.
How does that affect the equation, it being 2 degrees warmer?
The impact, particularly on potential infectious diseases, could be profound. It changes the entire ecology. And you start looking at that in relationship to potential runoff issues in urban areas like here in Southern California. The implications could be really profound because people like to live in the water. People like to swim. People like to fish and so forth. And the long-term ramifications of the water temperature being higher could affect human health.
Another side effect of the changes in the water level would be a decrease in power production in places like Hoover Dam.
Can you imagine the fact that Hoover Dam, the water would be so low in the Colorado, in Lake Mead, that Hoover Dam would not be generating electricity? Just imagine there's not enough water to handle our agricultural needs. Energy and water are so intricately linked. It would be a total breakdown of our system. And it's been projected that Hoover Dam may not be generating electricity in within the next 20 years.
Are We Running Dry look at some of the possible techniques and advances that are going to make a water situation more livable in the future for the Southwest?
Yes. In fact, I felt like I would be leaving everybody up in the air if I communicated that we're all going to hell in a handbasket. I wanted to make sure that we had solutions. And one of the issues that I talk about in the documentary is the depletion of groundwater resources all over the place. I mean, it's a big straw that's sucking up all our groundwater and our aquifers in the Southwest. And so we need to replenish these precious resources and recharging, as we call it, these groundwater and aquifers. Mm-hmm. We're dewatering our rivers. As a matter of fact, in northern Arizona, it's really terrible because Phoenix and Tucson takes advantage of the Central Arizona Project and the Salt River Project, and all the water runs down into the Phoenix area. But consequently, the people living up in northern Arizona have to rely on groundwater, and it's dewatering our streams. I talk about the importance of recharging. I also talk about becoming less reliant on the Colorado and starting to get involved in reuse. And also, I looked into the reality of desalinization on the West Coast. If we can solve those very important and critical issues, particularly the increased amount of energy that's required to run these systems, it could have a regional implications because then Southern California become less reliant on the Colorado, and that water could be used for the other states and in the watershed.
Can you point to any situations going on right now where the water situation is causing a detraction in the quality of life for Americans?
Absolutely. Right in the state of Arizona, you have a major population of Hopi Indians, of the Navajo Nation, and they are living under dire conditions. Lack of water. I mean, there are villages in the Hopi Nation that may be drying up because there's a lack of water. There are health issues associated with the quality of the water in the Navajo Nation. Women get birth defects. There's problems related to illness among children. There's a lack of sanitation. So in our own country, we have third world conditions, and it's right there in the state of Arizona.
Well, Jim, what's at the core of the lack of water for the Native American settlements? Is it a lack of funding and political will to build the infrastructure to supply it, or is the water simply unavailable?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, I think that there has been, you know, we had a what we call the Winter Doctrine, which in 1908, the United States Supreme Court ruled that every reservation in the United States, including Indian reservations, Native American reservations, would get water. But in many cases, those that's not been accomplished, and yet it's legally they're entitled to this water. And so it's a question of negotiating agreements and getting the water to the native community. And in other cases, of course, with the lack of water in the Colorado and our tributaries, this adds to the reality of making it more and more difficult. So we have to figure out ways to be able to get water to our native people. And the problem is exacerbated by conditions that are occurring in the watershed.
KUAT Channel 6 will air Are We Running Dry? As part of an evening of programming about the water needs of the Southwest. It starts at 8:30 next Thursday, November 13th. It will be followed by an Arizona Illustrated special presenting a community conversation on water. Then at 10 p.m., the film Liquid Assets, The Story of Our Water Infrastructure, will air. This programming happens on Channel 6 next Thursday evening. That's November 13th. Also, the documentary Are We Running Dry will be screened in IMAX on November 10th at the Arizona Science Center in Phoenix. We have a link online for more information at KUAZ.org. Coming up in the second half of the show, we'll tell you about two special events coming up that you can be a part of, both of which are celebrations of things that make Tucson a unique place to live. That's coming up next on Arizona Spotlight. Welcome back to Arizona Spotlight. One of this region's most important historical figures is being honored at a special event happening next Saturday, November 15th. A nonprofit organization is hosting the event, paying tribute to the life of Father Kino, a Jesuit missionary who traveled across the land that is now Arizona and Sonora. Next, Tony Paniagua tells us more in an interview with two organizers of the event.
Thank you, Mark. I'm joined by Jane Candia Coleman and Father Vicente Lopez. They are members of the Patronato de Kino, which will be honoring Father Eusebio Francisco Kino next weekend. Their first international festival is called La Entrada de Kino, or in English, The Entrance of Kino, and will include various activities for the public. Thank you very much for joining us, Jane and Father Lopez.
It's good to be with you. Thank you for inviting us, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, Jane, let's begin with you. So who exactly was Father Kino? We see the name all over Southern Arizona, but a lot of people, as you were mentioning a few minutes ago, still don't know who this person was.
Father Kino, I think, was one of the most important historical figures in Arizona and Mexico. He came as a Jesuit missionary in the 17th century, as a missionary, but he also brought cattle and wheat and pomegranates and figs to this country. He was a cartographer and an astronomer and an explorer. He's the one who discovered that California was not an island. He is, of course, associated here with the San Javier Mission in Tucson, for which he laid the cornerstones. He did not finish it, but he is a very important figure in this part of the country, and we think he should be honored and recognized.
Very good. And Father Lopez, why don't you tell us about this event that's going to be held and how the Patronato de Quino came to be?
The Patronato is a group of people here in Tucson that came together because we thought at this time in history, our town and our area of the world needed a figure that would call us to harmony, coexistence, mutual respect. And Quino does that in every sense of the word. So we're bringing together the Toho Autumn, the Yaqui tribal dancers, and they'll bless the land, West Congress, which where the I-10 and the Santa Cruz River intersect. And they'll be awaiting the arrival of Quino. We're reenacting that Quino's coming in. They're bringing their saints, St. Ignatius, the patron of the Jesuit priest, and St. Francis Xavier from St. Francis Xavier Mission, San Javier del Bac. And we'll have their dancing, their music at that site. And then in the afternoon from 2 to 6:30, we're going to meet at the Sentinel Building on Bonita, and there'll be presentations by historians Diana Hadley of the Arizona State Museum, Dr. Michael Weber, and from Magdalena Enrique Gonzalez, the president of the Sonora Historical Society. And they'll do presentations, and then by 4 o'clock, music and ballet folklorico from Mexico, from Magdalena, and trova, troubadour music, and some poetic recitations. So a very exciting full day of events that we're inviting the general public who want to live the spirit of Quino, different peoples from Mexico, the native peoples, and the people from Tucson, living in harmony and experiencing a community celebration.
And Jim, why is it so important for you to get involved in this? I know that there's a passion behind your work as a volunteer for this organization and this event.
Because I really believe in what the organization is trying to do, which includes hoping to help Father Quino be canonized as a saint. He is under consideration, but as the people in Italy wrote to me, well, with the Italian bureaucracy, one must have patience. So, but it's been 300 years now, so we are very vitally concerned with sainthood for Father Quino, but we're also concerned with, especially in these days, with peace and understanding along the border. Because I wrote the book, The White Dove, I have become involved in this, and I'm learning more every day, and I'm very excited about everything that we're doing.
Father Event, you mentioned many of the activities that are going to be held on Saturday, the 15th. Obviously, it's something for everyone.
Well, I'm sure the kids would love to see the native peoples and the horses as they come in to reenact the presence of Quino in this land. But also, there's the educational piece because there will be artists' paintings from Mexico that depict Quino themes will be exhibited. And then the poetic reading of Jane's book by herself, The White Dove, and then the Spanish translation of those poems. And then, of course, other speakers that will Mabry will be talking about the designs that the city has for that area of our city. And then after Jonathan Mabry's presentation, we go into the music and the ballet folklorico from Pasco, the Pasco ballet folklorico from Nogales, Arizona, Sonora.
And Jane, finally, what do you want people to take away once they've attended this event as they go home and continue to live their lives here in Southern Arizona?
I want them to realize the many varied cultures and races that live here and how wonderful they all are and what we can learn by coexisting and developing friendships with these people. I think it's very important. We can't just live here as Tucsonans and say, oh, we're it. There are other people who have much more to contribute.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Jane Candia Coleman and Father Vicente Lopez, talking about La Entrada, a festival that's going to be held on Saturday, November 15th.
La Entrada de Quino begins at 9 a.m. on the west bank of the Santa Cruz River at Congress Street, just west of I-10. We have a link for more information online at KUAZ.org. Right now in Tucson, no matter where you are or what you're doing, there might be artists lurking nearby. It's no reason to panic, but the opportunity to just talk to an artist about their inspiration or how they accomplish their work can be a rare one. The Tucson Pima Arts Council organizes an event called the Open Studio Tour, a chance for the public to visit the places where art is created.
To get a feel for what the Open Studio Tour is like, I went to two studios downtown with my guide, artist and Open Studio Tour co-chair Angela Rose. I started by asking Angela how long the studio tour has been happening.
It started in the mid to late 1980s, and it started with about 20 to 30 artists downtown, and it has grown now to being a city and county-wide event. And this year we have a record-setting 153 local artists participating.
Tell someone who's never been on the studio tour what kind of an experience to expect.
Well, Tucson is an art town. And so if you really want to see the behind-the-scenes deal, you want to go to the Open Studio Tour, because you will see sculptors, metalsmiths, painters, potters, fiber artists, performance artists, and the list just goes on and on. And you will see them in their own surroundings. So that's a very different experience than going to a gallery and seeing a finished work. You'll see a lot of finished work on the tour, but you'll really be able to meet the artist in his or her own environment and kind of see some of the tools of their trade and some of the inspiration that they surround themselves with as they work. And it sort of gives you an inside glimpse to the art-making process. So hopefully brings out the creativity in all of us.
If someone is thinking about participating in the studio tour for the first time, what would you suggest? How do you think they should approach it?
Well, the first thing they want to do is go to the website, TucsonPimaArtsCouncil.org, and look at the list of artists and the images that appeal to them. And then click onto that artist's website to see more information and to look at the map that is provided on the website. Another way is to find one of the art calendars in town from your local library or from Sarnoff Art and Writing or from the Tucson Pima Arts Council offices. And you can then manually choose the images and the artists that you'd like to see. You can look at the map and then sort of chart your course for the weekend.
In order to get a feel for the studio tour and what some people might expect if they venture out this Saturday and Sunday, I'm here at one of the studios participating. We're right near 6th and 9th, and we're in the studio of Joe Hatton.
Hello.
Joe, to someone who's never seen your work, how would you describe what it is that you do?
I paint oil on canvas, mid-size works, 4 by 5 feet I'm working on now. I paint in a traditional manner where I glaze. I use the paint thickly and thinly. And I'm working more abstract than I've ever worked up until this point. So I start with an image. It might come from a photograph or a drawing. And then I start morphing it or just working it. And hopefully I have some dialogue with that painting at some point in time. And it takes me to a new place.
How do you like talking to people about your work?
Well, sometimes it's difficult. Other times it flows, but I do like to talk to people about it. And I love the studio tour because that gives me an opportunity. When I paint, I don't talk to anyone. And sometimes I work for 4 hours and I haven't spoken a word. Somebody will walk in and it takes a while for my mouth to get going again, you know. But I like to talk about it. Sometimes the paintings now are hard to visually approach, you know, if people might like representation rather than a non-objective piece or an abstract piece. And so it's important for me to talk about that to them, to kind of let them know that there's actually a visual language that was taught to me, and then I can give them a crash course on it, kind of. And then it helps them. It helps them to see and understand what I'm doing.
We continued our tour by stepping outside and walking to the studio right next door, where artist Laurel Hansen creates her work. Among her paintings and drawings, dreamlike images showing the everyday intertwining with the spiritual. I ask her how she got started.
Gosh, I've been doing art since the very beginning. I came to Arizona in 1983 and went to school here and was making art then, and I'm still hiding in my little studio making art.
The studio tour takes away your chance to hide. You know that, right?
Yes. You've probably noticed that artists are pretty reclusive.
Have you participated in the tour as an artist before?
Oh, yeah. Probably about 11 years I've been on the tour. And I think it's a great opportunity for people to bring their families, kids, You know, people that just might not go to a gallery may be a little more intrigued to come into someone's own space and look at all the different kinds of art and materials, you know, just check it out.
How do you feel about talking to complete strangers about your work?
It's hard sometimes, but I do my best, and I realize that they're seeing something for the first time, maybe, and have questions, and I just try to answer them the best I can, because sometimes the pieces are very personal, and it's hard to describe a visual piece of art.
What mediums do you like to work in?
I like drawing mostly, drawing and painting, and I'll mix all of the above, but I like to work on paper mostly, and I like to a lot of times change the shape of the paper to give it sort of a quality of having come from somewhere else or being older. People don't always recognize that it's paper. Sometimes they think it's leather or canvas.
Before you participated in the studio tour as an artist, did you ever go as a spectator?
I've mostly always participated in the tour, but there's been a couple of springtime tours that I'm thrilled that I get to go look at other people's art. I actually went and saw Angela Rose's studio, places on the other side of town that I've never seen, and artists that I've seen their work in galleries, and it was just wonderful to meet them and see where they make stuff.
Angela, how do you think having something like the studio tour has benefited the Tucson arts community?
Well, I can tell you it has mobilized 153 artists this year. Last year we had 134 artists who joined the tour, and the year before that 106. So the artists are excited about opening their studios to the public. They're excited about their works being seen, and they're excited about creating a city and county-wide event that is quickly becoming a destination event for Tucson, and Tucson being a big art town.
The Tucson Open Studio Tour is open to the public and is happening Saturday and Sunday, November 8th and 9th, at locations all over the city. We have a link for more information available online at KUAZ.org. And now we'll hear about some more events happening around Tucson this weekend from Rose Brandt.
This Saturday, the Tangerine Gallery hosts Grab Your Sketchpad, an interactive exhibit featuring live models. It all starts at 1 p.m. at the Tangerine Gallery on Fort Lowell Road. More information is at tangeringegallery.com. The first annual Jewish Cook-Off and Food Festival is this Sunday, featuring live entertainment, food, and fun for the kids. The cook-off starts at 8 a.m. and the festival begins at noon at the Brandy Fenton Memorial Park. Honor the dead and celebrate the living this Sunday with one of Tucson's greatest traditions, the 19th Annual All Souls Procession. You can watch or participate in the 2-mile parade, including costumes, floats, and giant puppets, which pay tribute to the memory of loved ones. The procession ends with the burning of an urn filled with hopes and offerings for those who have passed on. It all starts at Epic Cafe on University and 4th at 5 p.m. Sunday night, Club Congress hosts Mole Hill Orchestra, the 7-piece performance group formed 10 years ago at the Dia de los Muertos celebration in downtown Tucson. The music starts at 7 p.m., and more information is at hotelcongress.com. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Rose Brandt.
That's Arizona Spotlight for this week. Thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio, Arizona Public Media, and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood, with production assistance from Matt Felix. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. Most of the music heard on our program, including the theme, was written and performed by Calexico. Arizona Spotlight is available to listen to online. Our website is KUAZ.org. I'm Mark McLemore.